This is an RNIB Connect Radio podcast.
News now here on RNIB Connect Radio for lovers of opera, as New Zealand Opera have just started offering access to Braille subtitles for blind and partially sighted opera fans. Opera companies around the world use subtitles where both the lyrics or the scripts are translated into other languages and published onto screens during a live performance to give audiences a deeper understanding of what is being said or sung on stage in real time. And now, with the Braille subtitles, this will be the same for visually impaired opera fans too. Brad Cohen, General Director of New Zealand Opera, who developed the technology alongside his company Context.live, joins me now all the way from New Zealand to tell me more about what I think will be a real game changer for blind and partially sighted opera fans. Hello, Brad, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
You're a Toby, thank you.
Firstly, Brad, where did the idea for giving blind and partially sighted people access to the Braille subtitles come from? And I must sort of point out that, of course, Braille would be the best way of reading the subtitles, but I think they are also available for people to view in large print and through speech on their smartphones too.
That's right. Well, there are a number of kind of outputs that you can access this content in. As you say, one is for low vision users that can have large text on tablets. But the Braille was a dream of mine from the start of my imagining about this project, because I thought it would be fantastic to have people being able to read using Braille readers in the venue, which was something that I'd never seen before in the Opera House. The idea really was it was a lockdown project originally with a colleague of mine, Hugh Glaser, who I've worked with on many kind of tech startup ideas. And it came from a feeling that surtitles, normal surtitles for use by sighted patrons in the Opera House, were well past their use date. Just to give you a bit of technical background, they're normally composed using PowerPoint slides, which is an incredibly laborious, time-consuming process. And they're not connected to anything. So these PowerPoint slides go out on screens, but there's no internet or web or Wi-Fi connectivity. There's no multiple output. They're just basically text on a screen. So they're, well, to be rude, they're a bit dumb and stupid. And technology affords everyone, but particularly in the accessibility realm, so much more than that. I thought there has to be a better way. So we worked together during lockdown. I was living in Oxfordshire and Hugh is in Southampton. And we thought, if we were building a new subtitle system from scratch, what would we want it to do? Well, we want it to be very lightweight. We'd want it to work with people's existing software. And we would want it to be useful for accessibility. So we'd want outputs that could go to tablets or to Braille readers. And that was the initial conception. Over time, the accessibility value of what we were building became more and more clear to us, because we realized that actually blind and low vision users are quite disadvantaged in their opera going experience. Normally, you'll have audio description, but it will only be for one show of an entire run of performances. So people are kind of corralled into these evenings. Well, you can come to this night because it's got AD, but for the rest of the run, there won't be anything for you. And we thought, this is ridiculous. This technology can be rolled out at zero overhead cost for every show. So why don't we just create a system that enables that? And that is indeed what we have now built.
Yeah, because I know sort of for myself as a sort of a fan of theatre and opera, and having gone to many audio described performances, I do get so much from the audio description of, you know, having everything on stage being described to me and everything else. But having the subtitles sort of at my fingertips through my Braille display is just going to make things a lot more accessible, because then obviously the describer doesn't necessarily have to tell the story in a way. They can just rely on describing what's happening. But as you say, you know, I can then go to any other performance and get an idea of the story as well. So this is going to be such a game changer, I think.
We hope so. And there's a reason why we called our company Context Live. It's because from a kind of philosophical position as an opera practitioner myself, I realized that the opera going experience has become attenuated. It's become a much thinner experience over the past, well, half century maybe. In the 18th and 19th century, people used to read the libretto before they went to the opera. That is, libretto booklets would be published and sold for very low prices by local printers. So you'd arrive at the first performance of Verdi's La Traviata, maybe in 1849, and you would not only know the Alexandre Dumas story, you would have read the libretto that you were going to hear in the opera house that night. That kind of tradition has almost completely worn away. So people arrive, and increasingly people who are not well-versed in opera attendance arrive having almost no idea about what they're going to see. So the thrust of the company at root is about giving better context to the opera experience. The affordance that accessibility offers is just a great enrichment of that, because it gives that kind of immediacy, that experience to blind and low vision patrons on an equal footing with sighted patrons. And that for us is a really strong proposition. There's no reason, given this technology, why blind and low vision patrons should be disadvantaged anymore. Everyone gets the chance to experience the same Sertiles in real time. And another great advantage for us was that, of course, when you're at the opera, if you're having intense audio description, it can cut across orchestral interludes or moments when someone's not singing. The silence of the Braille reader possibility makes it a really cohesive experience for someone who really wants to use their ears to be embedded in the sung music and the orchestral music without audio description or text interfering with that. So we created a context in which you can have just Braille on your reader, or you can have audio description, or you can use both. So Paul Brown, who is our primary tester in Auckland, and a very influential member of the Braille and blind and low vision community, for his testing, he used audio description through earphones, the Braille reader through Context Live, and his own ears for the experience. And for him, that worked really well. So I think it's more a question of components which can be mixed and matched together according to what the user wants.
And how easy was it to get the Sertitles through the technology onto somebody's Braille display? Was that a fairly sort of easy process?
It was. At root, it was really easy. We had a couple of really interesting hurdles. We use WebSockets technology, which, instead of being a pull technology, when you load a browser page normally, you're pulling content. But for live Sertitles that are happening in a rapid fire way, we need to push that content to people's browsers without them having to do anything. There was a little bit of a hurdle in the sense that there was some connection between Apple VoiceOver to the Braille reader, which didn't automatically refresh the web page. So we had to devise a workaround for that. And once we'd done that, everything was smooth as butter. And the trial was a success. And the experience of users in the theatre throughout the course of this run has been entirely successful. So we're beyond thrilled with the way it's gone.
Oh, that's fantastic to hear. And I suppose it's really good to have that feedback from blind and partially sighted people who have got their fingertips on the technology during those performances as well. And I suppose they were sort of, I suppose, overwhelmed by how accessible opera would now become.
Well, they loved it. Paul in particular loved it. But, you know, it's a tough crowd. They're demanding about what they want their experience to be. And they're very acute about identifying weaknesses and shortcomings, for which we're incredibly grateful. They're the kind of testers that we really love and value, because they immediately challenge us and expose shortcomings that we may not have thought about. Just to give you one example, in the production that I'm conducting and that my company is performing at the moment, the director created very demotic Sertitles in a kind of Kiwi slang, but they were very long. So there are many characters for each surtitle, and they pass through at a great rate. It was clear that for Braille readers, there were going to be some challenges with that. So there was a need to create a slightly truncated form of those surtitles that were just as funny, but didn't have as much fluff, if you like. So that parallel translation turned out to be required shortly before the first night. And thanks to the technology that we've built, it was not very complicated to devise a parallel translation. So the parallel translation, if you like, is going to the Braille reader. The sighted audience is seeing the longer titles. But in fact, we could mix and match those in any order that we wanted because of the flexibility of the system. So yes, we love our testers. We're incredibly grateful to them because I don't read Braille. So it was really important to get feedback from Braille readers about the pace of delivery of the surtitles and the experience of sitting in a darkened theatre with a Braille reader on their laps, how that worked. And it was positive, so we're thrilled.
And I think access to opera is really expanding at the moment. We've got opera companies which are led by visually impaired and disabled performers. And here in the UK, with the Royal Opera House offering both live and recorded audio description for their productions. And of course, with your Braille surtitles, access to opera for blind and partially sighted people is just getting wider and wider, isn't it?
The corralling of people with particular needs and requirements in the performing space is something that, from my own point of view, I just find that objectionable. If the technology is there to support equality across all performances, why on earth would that not be offered? It's discriminatory in a really insidious kind of way to say, unless you're free on Tuesday the 19th, you're not going to be able to see this show because you are blind or vision impaired. And for us, it was a really important proposition that this should be available without any additional cost overheads at every performance to create a much more level playing field. I'm delighted that accessibility awareness is growing. And I speak from a kind of personal story of my own. I had a very loved grandfather who lost his sight in his 60s, but he'd been an incredibly voracious reader all his life. And this was before audiobooks really took off. His life was severely disadvantaged by his inability to read on paper. And I think when I look back to the sources of why this project has been personally important to me, it's that story, because I witnessed someone becoming diminished in their enjoyment and their accessibility to culture because of a loss of sight. I don't want anyone else to have that. So for me, this is a kind of writing of the record, if you like.
Oh, it's lovely. Brad, what other options can you see for the use of the technology? Because I can probably see it being used in maybe sporting events or live concerts and stuff and things like that. Can you see it developing outside the Opera House?
I can, and that's something we've thought about, but in a way, we're waiting for suggestions to come to us. I think we're humble about what we don't know and what we haven't thought about. I think the strengths of the technology are twofold. Firstly, it's time sensitive. So as you say, Toby, something like sports scores, cricket scoreboards, data around sporting events would be a super useful facility to offer to blind and low vision users, because, as explained, we can fire live updates to their mobile phones and then through VoiceOver to their Braille readers, if that's what they want, or to their tablets. The other great application that we're just beginning to see interest in is this technology works with anything with a pre-existing script. Now, that existing script can be a recently updated sports score in the last second or two. That's still a pre-existing script, although by a very small time margin. But one area that's really of interest to me is news, broadcast news, radio, conferences, lectures. Don't forget that because this goes across the web, it's available simultaneously globally throughout the world. So if there's a time alignment with, say, broadcast news, a premiere of a movie, a new movie showing, anything where there is existing script can be fed through the system in real time to anywhere on the globe. And that for us is a massive opportunity. I think we've barely begun to think of the possible applications of that. For instance, I'm having a conversation tomorrow with someone from the UK about the application of this technology to silent films and the intertitles that happen between frames for silent films. Now, that is something I had never thought about as an application for this technology, but I see it as an obvious thing. This was a blocker for this person in their work, that they couldn't find a technology that was able to be time sensitive and to fire text. That's basically what we do. So it'll be very interesting to see what direction that takes.
I can think of foreign films and stuff and things like that, translating those when you get the translation on the screen. You know, that would be a great use for it.
Absolutely. And of course, a lot of that technology exists already. There is time code for almost every movie with foreign surtitles. What it hasn't been harnessed to is mobile dissemination on people's devices through voiceover to their braille readers. But we have already devised, in theory, a very simple way to harness that. The challenge is to find a kind of zero time starting point for both of those sources, for the device and for the movie. If we could work out in practice how to trigger, say, the beginning of a DVD in someone's machine with a time code, everything else would be simple, because we would simply fire the subtitles according to that time code. And that is something we're working actively on now. So that's a really exciting area. You know, we've heard from blind and low vision users that actually films in English are no challenge because they speak English, if they're English blind and low-sighted users. But the foreign films are really a challenge. Whereas for deaf users, it's the reverse. They enjoy and are incredibly knowledgeable about foreign films because they come with subtitles which they can read. But for English films, which don't have subtitles, deaf viewers don't have as good an experience. So it's a really interesting mix of needs. Certainly, the ability to serve multiple languages in subtitles, which is what we already do in the opera realm, is something that is ripe for development in the theatre and movie realm.
And will Braille subtitles now be available for all New Zealand opera upcoming performances?
That's what we're doing. And it's so thrilling to know that we can commit with confidence to every future production having every performance with Braille subtitles.
Brad, if listeners or opera companies would like to find out more about the Braille surtitle technology and maybe start using it for their performances in their opera houses, where is the best place for people to go to find out more about the technology?
Well, the name of the company is the name of the website, so that's an easy one. It's contexts.live. That's actually our domain name. It's our company name. And it's where you can go on the web to contact us. We have an email address there, and we would love to hear from users and also from developers and customers who have new applications in mind. We think we're only at the beginning of this technology and what it can afford. We're kind of amazed that it hasn't happened before, but I guess because of my and Hugh's position, we sit in a sweet spot between performance, opera performance, and technological understanding. And maybe it's just that the opera industry has never thought hard enough about this in recent years. It feels like we've struck a moment. The degree of media interest worldwide with New Zealand Opera's inauguration of this technology has been tremendously exciting for us at Context Live, but also for the team at New Zealand Opera, because connecting with our community and our communities is a real core part of our mission as an opera company. And this is really the embodiment of what we want to be doing. We want everyone to enjoy the power of opera. But yes, Toby, in short, context.live is the place to find us.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Brad, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio. And I hope that very soon, myself and other blind and partially sighted opera fans will get their fingertips on Braille surtitles here in the UK too.
Me too. Thank you so much, Toby. Great to talk to you.